Thank you, Mr. Parsley. Good afternoon, everyone. Hope everyone's surviving and faring well now that winter has finally arrived. I know I'm counting down the days to spring already, but that's just me. I know a lot of people enjoy it. Well, we've had multiple messages recently based on aspects of the prophet Jeremiah's life and writings, and those messages, along with one of the hymns that we recently sang, have been the inspiration for today's sermonette. During the ABC sampler weekend, two of Mr. Dunkel's presentations provided insight into Jeremiah's life and experience as he prophesied during the last years of Judah's decline and as they were taken captive by Babylon. And then last week during the Bible study, Mr. McLean provided a very helpful overview of how God allowed and then used the dispersions of the peoples of Israel and Judah, with much of that explanation coming from the accounts within Jeremiah. And then in the midst of these somewhat encouraging but also very sobering messages, 2 weeks ago, Mr. Swank led the quite encouraging hymn, All Must Be Well, number 144 in our hymnal. Verse 3 of that hymn, All Must Be Well, begins with the words, We expect a bright tomorrow. All must be well. We expect a bright tomorrow. That's a true statement on many levels, but sometimes it can be difficult to reconcile the present and anticipated pain with long-term promises of hope and restoration and reconciliation. These challenges of perspective manifest in both our individual and collective outlooks. So in the time that we have remaining today, let's continue in the recent focus on Jeremiah's writings and review a passage that contains both a warning and an encouragement to help in shaping our own perspectives as we grapple with experiences that resonate with the messages that God sent through that prophet. The passage we'll review is in Jeremiah chapter 7. Jeremiah chapter 7, starting in verse 1. And in the New King James version that I have, the subtitle of this section is Trusting in Lying Words. Jeremiah 7, verse 1. The word that came to Jeremiah from the Lord, saying, Stand in the gate of the Lord's house and proclaim there this word, and say, Hear the word of the Lord, all you of Judah, who enter in at the gates, at these gates, referring to the gates of the temple, to worship the Lord. Thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, Amend your ways and your doings, and I will cause you to dwell in this place. Now, commentators point out that this occasion in which Jeremiah shared a message from God at the temple is the first recorded public address that Jeremiah gave. The nation of Judah was in a bad way at this time. The expositor's commentary provides a good summary of the background. The people, it says, were shocked by Josiah's death and then the removal of Jehoahaz, who replaced Josiah for only 3 months, and then the imposition of Jehoiakim as king by Pharaoh Necho of Egypt, who had killed Josiah. So this tumultuous series of events that the nation was going through is summarized very clearly in 2 Kings 23 for anyone who would like to review it there. Now, the worst aspect of the governmental and social upheaval and turbulence that Judah faced was that the religious reforms that Josiah had instituted largely began to die with him. 2 Kings 23 records that God's judgment for national sins that predated Josiah were not going to be reversed, and that his sons, Jehoahaz and Jehoiakim, that followed him on the throne, both did evil in the sight of the Lord. And despite this, many believed that God's deliverance of Jerusalem during Hezekiah's reign amounted to an indefinite and unconditional guarantee of safety. So Jeremiah's sermon began in verse 3 with a reminder that the reality of the national fate had not been somehow separated from the personal and collective choices of the people, that it was still largely dependent on how the people interacted with God as to what happened and their obedience or disobedience. Verse 4, Jeremiah continues, "Do not trust in these lying words, saying, 'The temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord are these.'" Now, as we read them today, the words that were condemned here as deceptive can seem to lack any kind of real strong indication or meaning, but as commentators point out, they represented a deadly message that placed reliance in the presence of the physical temple rather than in God himself. The expositor's description of what was happening is quite clear and powerful. It states, "With great courage, Jeremiah warned the people against believing the deceptive words of false prophets ascribing talisman-like power to the temple. The people were using the words, 'The temple of the Lord's are these,' like a magical incantation. The words were true, but what the people inferred from them was erroneous. The false prophets assured the people of the personal intervention of God in the case of any danger to the temple and Zion. But Jeremiah thundered that the temple without godliness was a delusion." So there's no power in the temple itself is a large part of the message that he was bringing. The Nelson Study Bible provides some additional insight into what led to the conclusion that the temple amounted to an assurance of protection. It states, "The people believed that since God had chosen Jerusalem as his dwelling and had promised that a Davidic king would remain on the throne forever and had delivered the city from attack in the days of Hezekiah and Isaiah, that he would never allow the city or the temple to be destroyed. They believed the building guaranteed their safety, whether or not they obeyed the provisions of the covenant." This description contains the essence of the warning that is so pertinent for us today. We don't have a physical temple for centralized worship as Judah still had at the time, but there are still numerous ways to misplace our focus on physical things that won't determine the outcome of our lives rather than on the provisions of our covenant with God. A few examples of these things could include the physical organization and the physical buildings or properties of the church. Mr. Dean gave a very interesting seminar in the ABC seminars a couple of weeks ago talking about a lot of the church's history, and we know that in much of that history there were more expansive properties, more expansive opportunities for the church, and those are all great things in their place and time, but it's easy to misplace our focus, even on things like that. How about government institutions and the people who hold positions within them? Or government policies that are based on political ideologies and preferences. Very easy to get wrapped up in those things. Relationships with the right people within our families or society or the church. We can begin to think that those relationships guarantee something beyond what they can. Even the physical obedience of God's law, such as Sabbath observance and tithing, even those things can become an area of focus beyond what they are intended to be. All of these things and many more can become equivalent in our minds with the godly character and relationships that we are to be developing, but they are not in themselves. We need to be careful to base our belief and our confidence and our hope on the provisions of our covenant with God. Our individual and collective covenant with God is the only true source of security and promise. Nothing else, real or imagined, physical or spiritual, will determine the outcome of our lives. This had always been the case for the descendants of Israel, but they hadn't clearly understood it, just as we can fail to understand it at times. Jeremiah reminded the people of this in that same address, Jeremiah chapter 7, again starting in verse 22, God is speaking here through Jeremiah, and he states, "For I did not speak to your fathers or command them in the day that I brought them out of the land of Egypt concerning burnt offerings and sacrifices. But this is what I commanded them, saying, Obey my voice, and I will be your God, and you shall be my people." Verse 23 is a quote from Jeremiah 6:3, and this is within Moses' rehearsal and summarization of God's covenant with Israel at Sinai, which is recorded in Exodus 19 through 24. Let's go back to the first words of that covenant and remind ourselves of its high-level provisions. Exodus 19. Exodus chapter 19. And again, this is with Israel meeting with God at Sinai. Exodus 19, starting in verse 5, where God states, "Now therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be a special treasure to me above all people, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words which you shall speak to the children of Israel." So when Jeremiah pointed people back to the covenant, he's also reminding them that it did not even mention the temple or the sacrificial system that surrounded the tabernacle in the wilderness and later the temple as God's dwelling place. The covenant that God had made with Israel was not based on any physical symbols or structures, but on the relationship between them. And it is the same for us today. The covenant that we make with God at baptism contains no provisions that depend on any level of how things go in government or in the vast realm of things that we can't control within society, or even within the church. There are no talismans in any of these places that will guarantee our comfort or safety or success. That's what makes this account in Jeremiah both an incredible warning and an incredible encouragement. The warning is that the things that we tend to naturally focus on can't bring the outcome in life that we are hoping for. But the encouragement is that such things also can't prevent us from reaching that outcome. They can only stand in our way if we choose to let them. The essence of God's message through Jeremiah is that the relationship between him and his people and the mutually agreed contract that governs that relationship is the only basis of both security and prosperity. As God later inspired Jeremiah to write, the descendants of Israel would not live up to the covenant that they had agreed to, and neither the temple or any other physical source of deliverance that they might have trusted in could prevent the profoundly painful consequences of that sad reality from coming to pass. Yet, because of God's great mercy and his complete commitment to live up to his end of the agreement, Jeremiah was inspired to prophesy of the covenant that would ultimately open the way to salvation for all mankind, and that is the covenant that we are incredibly blessed to participate in now. Let's conclude with that promise in Jeremiah 31. Jeremiah chapter 31. Chapter of great hope in many respects, Jeremiah 31, verse 33, where God states through Jeremiah, "But this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days." It's referring back to verse 31, talking about the days that would come when the old covenant made at Sinai would be superseded. "This is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days, says the Lord. I will put my law in their minds and write it on their hearts, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people." Just as it was for the people who heard Jeremiah's message, our deliverance will be found in the provisions of the covenant and nowhere else. Let's strive to focus on remaining faithful to that agreement and its incredible promises.